Oh, hi, Dick. First of all, thank you for your service and all you've done for the country. I got a question. When they saw that Japanese ship and they had a launch, what was the reaction of you and the crew? You understood the implications that you were going to be having to take off earlier than you planned, and what, or were you just ready to go at any time?
Yeah. What was your reaction when you learned you had to launch early? What was you and your crewmates, what was your reaction to that?
Well, as a crew, Colonel Doolittle had told us that now we might be able to do what we wanted to do, or if we get discovered early, we'll have to play it by ear and what to do. It ended up that the Nina Maru, one that was sunk by, it was the key to the whole thing. It turned out that there were quite a few battleships, enemy battleships, around Tokyo and so forth. And I think we would have been worse off if we had gone farther in.
Jana?
There was a whole net of picket ships around the islands, and they did have the ability to radio back. I wanted to jump in here, too, for just one thing. They trained 25 crews. Only 16 airplanes made it onto the Hornet. But all crew members made it on. So any one of those guys could have stepped down at any minute. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, weren't the other crew members offering to buy your slot? Nobody did.
Ladies and gentlemen, Lieutenant Colonel Dick Cole and Jana.
Thank you.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, over to my left with the microphone, Sam Bass, with Doug Jeans and Evan Fagan in just a moment. Sam, you're up.
Thank you, folks. Thank you for hanging around and seeing something about the B-25. I've got two experts here on the airplane. I've got Evan Fagan. He's the chief pilot and a paper doll here. It's a B-25J. We have B-25H Barbie over here, which is part of the Kavanaugh Flight Museum, and Doug Jeans is going to be here. And so we're going to really start off with, how about telling me about something about the specifications of the B-25, the engine, horsepower, range, and that sort of stuff.
Okay, the B-25 that utilizes the R2600 Wright engine that's on takeoff, 1700 horse, and in cruise it's 1500 horsepower. They're good, reliable engines, 14-cylinder. They burn about 200 gallons the first hour, 150 after that. They hold, with the outboard tanks, about 974 gallons, and about 37.5 gallons of oil each engine.
All right, Doug, how about telling us the design purpose? It's a medium bomber, but tell us why it was designed and who designed it.
Well, it was built by North American. Most of them were built out in California. It was designed just to be a medium bomber, something fast to get in and be a little more accurate, close-in kind of support instead of the high altitude like the heavy bombers.
How about theaters of operation? Where was it?
It was just about everywhere. You know, it was in used in Europe, it was also used in the Pacific and down in Africa. It kind of served all over.
Now, we've got two models here. How many different models did we have on this B-25?
You know, The main ones that you see around are J models. They went all the way up, I believe, to the N. The H model, of course, was the cannon nose model. So.
And we'll get into that in just a little bit. Okay. Now, how many do you think are still left flying? Do you have any idea?
I believe the total is around 40, I heard. There was the PBJ just restored in California, and I heard that was like the 40th that's flying.
Okay. How about the crew? How many crew were on it?
Six crew were on the B-25.
Six, and that's all models was normally six. And what would you have, pilot, co-pilot? What, radio operator? What else?
Yep, bombardier. You'd have the tail gunner, waist gunner, and the engineer, and pilot, co-pilot.
Okay, well, we're speaking of armament now. What was the armament and the bomb load on these particular ones? And of course, it's different on each one.
Okay, the armament, like on the J you see here, was 12 50 caliber machine guns, and as it's sitting now, it would carry 3,000 pounds of bombs. They could carry one Mark 13 torpedo, which was 2,000 pounds, or 8 5-inch high velocity rockets. And then Doug can talk about the H.
Yeah, now this is kind of unique, this here. This,
yeah, the H model is, of course, it's the only one still around, still flying. I believe there's one other one in the Air Force Museum up in Dayton. But it started out, they took some D models in the field and put a 75-millimeter cannon, which is the same thing that's on a Sherman tank, in there just to try to play with it, see if it helped out. That was designated as a G model. And then once they kind of perfected it, they went back to the factory and they developed the H model from the kind of from the get-go and purely designed it and built it to carry the cannon.
Now, when they fired that thing, did it just stop it in the air?
Yeah, they said, I was just talking to somebody a few minutes ago that said the first time they fired one off, that they just got the got the aircraft and said, hey, go get in it, go fly, learn how to do it, and they loaded it up. And the first time that they fired it, everybody in the airplane thought that they'd hit something, and everybody started donning the parachutes. They jettisoned all the hatches and were getting ready to bail out before he could let them know, no, that was just a gun. So after that, he learned to always let them know before he fired it.
Now, where was this used and what theater was this used in, the H model?
The H model primarily was used in the Pacific Theater. Something, if everybody go look on YouTube and look up B-25 cannon, there's a great video of in the field, these things lined about four or five of them line abreast coming into an island firing those cannons. That's pretty neat.
Well, now, how did you load the thing?
They had it's a little bit different from the B-25. It was a single pilot. The right seater was basically called a cannoneer, and his seat was a little bit further back. And he loaded the gun and then would get up out of the way. And one thing they found out, we met the guy that worked on the prototype that's in that film that I was talking about. And the first time they fired it, the breech came out of the back of the gun and went through the wall and into the bomb bay. And that patch is on the airplane in the bomb bay. So what they would do is they would load it, and then the cannoneer would get his feet up out of the way just in case that happened again or a shell was ejected around, and tap the pilot on the shoulder, and he'd fire. And it took about a minute and a half to get around each round off.
Well, did they use it like a strafing mission, an air-to-ground? Is that what they were
just
using it for?
Just about always, yeah. They just come in, line abreast. Like I said, the video really shows it pretty neat. Come in, line abreast, and attack a target, and of course, shoot the 50s, get everybody's head down. And with the 50s and the tracers, just like the Sherman, it has the one gun on the, next to the cannon. Well, they can watch the tracers. Once they start hitting the target, then let off a cannon shell.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Evan, now, the airplane has got a nose wheel on it. This had to be one of the first ones with a nose wheel, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe the B-25 was, and actually the nose wheel on the B-25 is probably the hardest part of the plane to get get comfortable with when you're flying it. It has a free castering nose wheel, so the first few flights taxiing, it's a little bit of a rodeo. But
well, if you overturn, can it get locked in position like a T-33 and somebody out here come to rescue you?
Well, I've heard there's been people who have knocked the front wheel off by some wild taxiing, but once you get them down, they're very easy to fly. They're good flying airplanes, but the nose wheel on these is a bit of a rodeo at first.
All right. Doug, now you're familiar airplanes. I love them.
Another North American product.
You got another North American product. This is a gull. It has a kind of a gull wing to it. Why is that?
Well, the original prototype had a straight wing, and I think they had some stability issues. It also had a single tail that stuck pretty high up, and they modified it for a couple of reasons. One was single engine. They got a little bit better performance having the dual tails and one behind each prop wash, and also they could fit it in most of the hangars that were available at the time.
All right. What's the significance of your paint job and your nose art?
Well, Paper Doll was in the 321st Bomb Group, 447th Bomber Squadron in Corsica. And my mom is actually the one who picked out the scheme, and the significance and the reason I think she picked it out was because it had 125 missions. and they're depicted by the bombs painted on the side. So that's
and
kind
this
of
this is your mom.
No, it's not. no, but that I think that's the reason. It had 125 missions, so we thought that was pretty significant.
Okay, that's great. How about yours?
Well, it's painted up in the 1st Air Commando, which Dick Cole, of course, was part of. And it's painted up in R.T. Smith's markings. His wife was Barbie, and R.T. Smith was one of the right. AVG, you know, Flying Tigers. So he started the 1st Air Commandos, which Dick Cole was part of.
All right, let me ask you one last question here. What does it mean to you to bring these airplanes so these veterans can see it? Of course, the Second World War guys are disappearing, but we've still got Korea and Vietnam and the rest of them. They're just as interested as everybody else.
I'm a little bit older than Evan here, but I've been doing it for about 30 years, and just, you know, having all the veterans coming out is just amazing, and it really brings chills to you when you see some of these guys, and they're showing their kids and their grandkids. And now, as you said, we also have a lot of Vietnam aircraft at the Kavanaugh Museum, so you're starting to see the Vietnam people coming out and seeing the airplanes and talking about them.
How about you, Evan?
Yeah, it's, and I'm, you know, I've been in flying these for 13 years, warbirds in general, and to get to meet the World War II vets and their families and their grandkids, it's really neat to see them connect with the airplane. And I've noticed a lot of times when these guys get close to their airplanes, they act younger, they're excited, they get to see their airplanes they used to fly in combat, and those are the real pilots. We get to fly them for fun. Those guys flew them, getting shot at and using them for their intended use. So it's fun to get to let those guys see it and, you know, in the museum and get back with them.
And by the way, any of you folks that get by Granite Falls, you need to go there. They've got some unique things. For instance, they've got sand that actually came from D-Day. So if you can, stop by there. And thanks again. Thank you for bringing your beautiful airplane here. And thank you, sir.
Thanks, Sam.
We'll see you again. Thank you.
Right. That's about right. Good work. Perfect. Thank you, gentlemen.